Blog Talk Radio.
You are now online with Andrea, with your host, Andrea Garrison.
Welcome. You are now online with Andrea. I am your host, Andrea Garrison, here on Blog Talk Radio. And whether you're on the phone line, on the internet, on a podcast, listening, chatting, blogging, listening to us live, or reviewing one of our archives, we are so happy to have you with us. For those of you who'd like to call in, the call-in number is 347-426-3895. And we will be opening up the phone lines later in the show for those of you who choose to call in. And for those of you who like to chat, please join our chat room. It is open, but you must be registered with Blog Talk to chat in our chat room. Now, imagine being in a marriage in which two people have learned how to love each other in such a way that leads to the wholeness of both people. Tonight, our guest will take you on a journey to deeper intimacy. Our guest is executive marriage coach Tom King. How are you?
I am just fine, and I'm thrilled to be on your show, Andrea.
It's great having you here, and I must tell you, I love your blog, www.growitforward.com. It's wonderful. And when I heard about the fabulous work that you do, I went to your site, and you had a blog, and the topic was The Road of Recovery. And I loved it so much. And you start out saying, the road of recovery is not the same as the path of despair. Mm. And you say, when you walk the path of despair, you did so not knowing why you felt so bad, and you felt completely alone. You felt no one understood or could possibly know what you were going through. The roots of your despair were yet unconscious. You feared being swallowed up by the grief and the darkness. The road to recovery is a different road. On this road, you must face your fears and also walk into your darkness. However, this is a path that promises hope, not despair, healing, not death. On this road, you intentionally and consciously allow yourself to feel what you feel, to remember and to mourn, but you don't walk this road alone. You will have helpers who walk beside you, hold your hand, or shine a light on the path. You find new ways of knowing yourself and become intimate with your history and emotional memories. As you venture in, with open mind and open heart, you discover that the divine love is there, waiting for an invitation, leading you back to your core and your source. Wow. I have to tell you, what is it like listening to that? Are you saying, did I write that?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, that sounded pretty darn eloquent, I think.
It sounded pretty good, huh?
It did.
It's amazing. Yes. Sometimes, well, you know, it's that we are a vehicle, aren't we? And sometimes
yeah.
these things come through us, and we're just there. We're the vessel, as they say, for the message.
Right.
But
right.
It was so beautifully written, so poetic. Well, you heard it.
It was, yeah, it sounded good. Like, really, I don't remember sitting down and being that eloquent, but it sounded good, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember writing that and what you were feeling at that moment? Do you?
Well, yes, actually, I do. I wrote that after having a session with a client who was going through some very difficult issues. A lot of those issues were rooted in fear and pain and despair. And so it was really a reflection of that conversation about really trying to encourage her to kind of face those fears and walk through that, the illusion that fear presents, and really go on that journey to knowing and understanding herself better. So,
now,
yeah, that's where
that
came from.
Did you give her that?
I did, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Did she like it? I'm sure she loved it.
Oh, yes. Yeah, she very much appreciated that, definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk about the road to recovery. And if you can elaborate more on the fact that, well, you say it's not the same as the path of despair.
Right. Well, you know, many of us fear just confronting some of the things that we struggle with. And so when I talk about the path of despair, so many of us have had difficult times and experiences in our lives. And when you step back and think about it, fear always stems from our primary developmental need, which is around attachment and bonding, which, of course, starts from day one in our lives. And we really never lose that need in our lives to feel attached to somebody, to feel close and bonded and safe and secure. So to the extent that those attachment needs are met consistently, we generally develop self-esteem and self-confidence, and we feel loved, we feel secure. But we all experience bumps on the road, and none of us have all of those needs met perfectly. And so when we get hurt, when we get rejected, when we get wounded, those become sort of the core fabric emotionally that oftentimes influences how we experience many things throughout the rest of our lives. And so typically what we do is we try to disconnect ourselves from those fears and from the wounds and the pains. And we try to make those things not hurt. And so we find many creative ways to do that. Some of those are functional, and some of those are not healthy or functional at all.
I mean, you certainly can understand why someone wouldn't want to relive certain experiences. But
of course.
But I guess what happens is if they push it aside and they don't really deal with it, then it's there anyway. So at some point, you do have to face them, right?
Well, yes. Let me give you, a classic example of a couple I was working with recently. And the gentleman in this relationship gradually started becoming aware of some of the roots of his own fears, which, of course, had a significant impact on his relationship. Now, without even knowing all the details of what happened to him that created the fears, what was more important was how he internalized that and the decision. A lot of times we make key decisions early in our lives that become the themes that thread throughout our whole life. Now, his key decision was really to build an emotional wall around himself, or a wall around his emotions, more accurately. And he made this decision that nobody is ever going to know me well enough to hurt me, in essence. Now, that decision he made at such an early stage of his life, he wasn't really even conscious of it.
Right.
But it became the defining theme of his life. He got into covering up his pain and his fears around that issue with alcohol for many years, which, of course, only further alienates himself from who he really is, and it stunted his emotional growth and development, of course.
Now, certainly,
if
you alienate yourself from yourself, then you also alienate yourself from others, right?
Absolutely, and of course, that's exactly what happened, is it played out in his marriage. I mean, he and his wife were sitting there, and, you know, she said, you know, we've been married for 20 years, and I can honestly say I really don't know you, and I don't think you've shared the essence of who you are at all. And finally, when he started to understand this, and, you know, he'd been through treatment for his alcohol abuse actually only a year or two before that. So this is still relatively fresh stuff for him. He's getting in touch with some of his feelings around this. But the way he articulated that, I thought, epitomized exactly the fear. And he said, you know, I have constructed this wall, and coming out from this wall is so terrifying. It feels like there's 10 snipers out there waiting to just take me out if I come out from behind this wall. And, you know, you're asking me to come out from behind this wall and let you know me. I just need to tell you how terrifying that is for me.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't, in a way, he doesn't really want to know himself. So, but I wonder how, you know, this woman admitted that she felt that she never really knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
Why would someone marry someone and they feel they don't know who they are?
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know what I mean?
Question.
Or did she realize that?
Well, no. I don't think she did realize that. At least, you know, not in a real aware, conscious way. I mean, it happens to all of us in one relationship or another, especially when we're young, and if we choose a life partner when we're young, before we've had a chance to really know ourselves and to work on our own maturity level, and, you know, the partner's in the same place. We always end up attracting somebody who's on a similar emotional plane. You know, if we're, you know, if we haven't worked through some of our own woundedness, we're going to find somebody else who's got a complementary set of problems, right? So there's this unconscious attraction there based on the fact that it feels emotionally familiar. It feels similar. A lot of times it's related to family of origin stuff where this person feels emotionally like my father or like my mother, that kind of thing. So we get into these relationships really with the hope that we find somebody who's going to be like that primary parent but different. You know, this is somebody who's going to love me and let me into that inner circle. And so we come in with great optimism and hope. Of course, what we find out is that over a period of time we start to feel frustrated and hurt in this relationship because that period of initial optimism and connection never lasts over the long term because we haven't understood ourselves and worked through those developmental issues. And so then we start getting into the conflicts.
Now, I was
and the
wondering,
problems.
Now you counsel couples,
yes,
with the hopes they come to you hoping that they'll build their relationship and make it stronger and stay together, correct?
Yes, most of the time that's absolutely true.
Now, do you ever have you ever had a situation where you felt that there was no point in a particular couple being together? I would imagine you don't make that decision, but
no, I don't. I don't make that decision, but yes, I mean sometimes it seems, you know, that you know, ending a relationship is the best thing to do if it you know, is kind of so abusive and people are not really willing and or able to make the transition. The other thing I have done with couples is send them away to go to individual therapy to work on themselves first because they're just not in a place where they're ready and able, you know, to work together on a relationship.
So sometimes you can't counsel the couple. They have to really have individual counseling,
yeah,
first.
That's true, but those are the exceptions. You know, most people are really coming to couples counseling or working with a coach on couples issues because they are ready and they sincerely want to work on their relationship. They care about each other. And I always say as long as you have that, you know, that you care about each other and you really want to work on it, there's always hope.
Right.
Then we've got something to work with.
But another thing I wonder, like there are certain societies where they have arranged marriages, where the family, certain cultures, they actually pick the mates.
Sure.
So that they don't even know the people. You know, the family gets involved and chooses their mate, and you know, I've spoken to people who come from certain cultures, and they said it worked. And they didn't know anything about the person, their family, with Jews. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I haven't done any independent studies on that. But I find it interesting how in certain cultures, you know, they suggest people have premarital counseling and that they do all this stuff and really make sure you know what you're doing. And then in other societies, they don't even choose their mate. They're chosen for them, and then, you know, they're married for a lifetime. They don't have high divorce rate. I wonder why that is. I find that fascinating.
Well, it is fascinating, and I don't really know what the statistics are either, but I suspect that the divorce rate is lower in those countries, but for lots of reasons. That doesn't necessarily mean the marriages are happier. I think the culture doesn't support the divorce and separation, most likely. But I'm not saying that the marriages cannot be happy, because, you know, probably the families are relatively thoughtful about who's going to make a good mate. So I would think if somebody really knows you well, understands your values, when, you know, is looking out for your best interests in your future, they might do as good a job of picking a mate as we do in the U.S. culture, you know, making those decisions based on primarily emotional reasons. Now, I mean, I think it's important to marry for love, to marry somebody that you do love and care about. But I think in those cultures, maybe people go in with the expectation that they're going to learn to love each other.
Right? Yeah, so I asked the person about that. I said, well, what about love? And they said, oh, love, oh, that'll come. The love develops, which I found fascinating.
It does, and I think that's a cultural expectation that, you know, if you don't grow up with that, that's probably not likely to work real well here. I don't
right.
know.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I just thought that was interesting and wondered what you thought, if you had any feelings on that and why that works and why, you know. But like you said, we don't know that it really works. It just may mean that they never part. But just because two people, and you know better than anyone, just because two people are together doesn't necessarily mean that it's a positive relationship.
No, exactly. Like the case in point I talked about earlier, where they've been married 20 years and really didn't have the bonding or connection that they really wanted, both of them wanted.
Yeah. So let's go back to the fears. You say that most people fear allowing themselves to feel their darker feelings because they remember times of being overwhelmed or crushed by them. No one wants to go through that, feeling of being crushed again.
Right. You know, and we all have different experiences, but some people walk through some very dark valleys. But like I say, when you're going through that in the process of running away from your feelings, running away from your fears, running away from yourself, in essence, frantically trying to, you know, just to cope with being hurt and wounded or depressed, that's a very lonely journey. And I think people do get completely overwhelmed sometimes by those dark feelings. And so when I talk about the road to recovery, usually what I'm talking about is engaging in a process, you know, with a good coach or with a therapist, or sometimes it's even in a good relationship where you create that safe space to work on those issues with somebody. And so I don't spend a lot of time really making people remember every little dark detail of their life, but I do encourage people to talk about their story, talk about the places where they were hurt and where they were wounded, and to give themselves permission to feel their feelings. And sometimes we just have a fear of our feelings because we remember being so hurt and so overwhelmed. But if you feel your feelings and you understand that, yes, it still may overwhelm me, it still may hurt, but I understand now why it hurts. I'm doing this purposefully, consciously, intentionally, and I'm doing it with support, so somebody can kind of guide me through that process. And so that's that road to recovery, is, you know, facing your fears, recognizing that you have to walk through them to get to the other side. You have to feel your feelings and get to know yourself on a more intimate level. Because the problem is not yourself. You know,
right.
Sometimes we think we're the problem, but the problem is not who you are, it's who you think you are. It's this perception of yourself and the disconnection from yourself that's the problem.
And do you find that oftentimes, like in the case of the couple you were mentioning, that they feel very negative about themselves, so they have low esteem, pretty much?
Well, is that common? It is common. It doesn't always look that way, of course. What I find is that people get stuck in these cycles of pain, cycles of fear, cycles of frustration. And what it looks like to them is that the problem is the other person, right? What's really going on is both people are reacting from, again, a fear base, and the primary fear is this person is not meeting my needs, this person is not attaching to me. So like the case I mentioned earlier, the woman in this relationship was feeling shut out, feeling abandoned emotionally, and so her fear was around kind of this abandonment piece. You know, my partner is not there for me. And so, of course, her response is to try to push through the wall and poke her way through that. So if she would get intense or get angry or frustrated, and, you know, the natural emotional response to that, of course, what was he hearing? He was hearing, wow, this is definitely not safe to come out from behind that wall. And so he would either, you know, respond in anger back, or more typically would just simply shut down further. Of course, when he shuts down, that ramps up her fear of abandonment, and so it goes, right?
Right, and they
and
just
around
keep
and around.
Feeding, and it keeps going around and around. And this can go on for years?
It can go on for years, and you keep having the same fight over and over again. I'm sure people have noticed that. It's the, you know, same song, different verse. But it's that core dynamic that's going on there that people don't see. They don't understand the cycle. They don't understand the fear that it's coming from. And that's where they get stuck, because all they see is my partner is unreasonable. Like, my partner never gives me what I want. My partner's always angry. My partner's pushing me away. And so you only focus outwardly, and
right.
Of course your partner is the problem. But that's not the reality. That's just the perception.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you find that to be common, that they're always blaming the other rather than stepping up and taking responsibility for their part in it as well. Because usually it is both. On both sides, there's some issue, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there is both sides of a cycle. You know, like I said, one is reacting to the other and kind of feeding each other. Really what I find most helpful is being able to shift the focus and shift the blame, if you will, from blaming each other for the cycle and sort of begin to see the cycle itself as the problem. Like, we're caught in this loop. It's really not something that either one of us want to be caught in, but we're caught in this destructive loop. And that's the problem. That's the enemy. We have to focus on the cycle and the things that are causing that cycle. And if each person then begins to look at that as the problem, and then looking at what can they do individually to begin to interrupt that cycle and to change the pattern of interactions, so they each begin taking responsibility for their piece of that, that's when it begins to change.
Yeah. And then you say that there will be helpers who walk beside you and hold your hand.
Mm.
So you're not alone, really.
No, I mean, I think once you make the decision to face your fears and to work on recovery, you find people who are there to help. I mean, there's all kinds of helpers in the world, right? So
right.
It could be a counselor or a coach, as we talked about, or a good friend, a group, a community of some sort. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that people get help. Sometimes it's a spiritual community that is willing to come alongside and hold your hand and just help you walk through the fears. people need different things, I think, and they need different things at different times in their lives for recovery.
Yeah.
It doesn't always happen all at once. Usually it's a journey.
It's and sometimes it's a long journey before they'll even go to see a counselor like you.
Right, right.
Yeah. And what gets them to that point where they will seek a marriage coach, say?
Well, unfortunately, it's oftentimes a crisis. sometimes, I've had people show up in my office, and one of them will say, I thought my marriage was fine, but all of a sudden I got this letter from my wife saying that she's been unhappy for 5 years and she's ready to leave me now. Well, big wake-up call, right?
Right.
So usually it's some kind of pain, some kind of crisis that brings people into a coaching relationship.
What is it, though, for 5 years, why someone would wait for 5 years and then send that letter? Why not mention it in year one? Do you know what I mean?
The answer comes back to the same fear dynamics. That's somebody who made a decision early in life to try to be pleasing, to try to be positive, to never really learned how to confront unpleasant things. And when she had tried to address some of those things earlier in her marriage, she got a hostile response. And so, not knowing what to do with that hostility or that conflict, she simply shut down. Right.
Yeah.
Again, there's lots of reasons why we behave the way we do, but it all kind of comes out of the same basic dynamics.
It really is quite a journey, just getting to know yourself. Kind of an ongoing exploration, right?
Well, that's kind of our lifetime journey, I think, personally, as we know ourselves better. And I think there's kind of evolution on different levels, emotionally as part of that, and spiritually as we begin to understand who we are and what our purpose is, and evolution in our relationships as we begin to know each other better and learn how to love each other better. Because part of what I think intimate relationships do is they're the great teachers in some ways. They show us the parts of ourselves we really don't like. They show us the parts of ourselves that need to be stretched. And so I think marriage stretches our capacity to love in some ways, as long as we cooperate with that in some ways. But the demand to love somebody who's not acting very lovable is not an easy thing, right?
Right.
I'm not acting lovable, but I'm demanding that you love me and you take care of me.
Right.
Well, nobody feels like doing that, but if you respond understanding that, okay, so this is part of the journey to love, for me not to lash out in a angry, hostile response, but to try to figure out what it means to respond in a loving way, that causes us to grow. Yourself to do that.
Right.
Right.
Well, I wanted to ask you if you could define intimacy. So what is intimacy? Mm. How do you describe it?
It's a good question. I was working with a young woman recently who made a very interesting statement about herself and her husband, and they're now in a kind of a crisis stage as well. But what she said was, we have great sex, but I don't feel loved. After sex, I feel sad. And that's because there's a lack of intimacy, right? So it's not, just about having great sex or having that physical connection. That sometimes can be a wonderful part of intimacy. But I think intimacy is really about knowing yourself and your partner better and better. It requires that vulnerability and openness to share that part with each other so that you can connect.
A couple can have great sex and not have intimacy.
Absolutely. Yeah. By her definition, great sex, right? So other people would say, well, that's not really great sex. But, you know, on a physical level, you know, that's the way she described it. You know, I can enjoy that physically, but I'm not feeling loved and valued and cherished and treasured and connected and safe and all those things that are part of an intimate relationship.
So an intimate relationship would lead to a better, then it's not even sex necessarily. Then it becomes really making love, right? It's more of a total experience rather than a one-dimensional physical.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's different relationships, obviously. I mean, you can be intimate in relationships outside of your marriage where you intimate with your children or with a good friend or whatever, where you can feel a secure, safe bonding and a freedom to be open and be who you are. I mean, that's a level of intimacy. In a marriage relationship, that emotional intimacy is usually also connected with sexual intimacy, but they're not one and the same. It's great though when they merge, right? Because you know that's kind of the ideal that we all want, is that deep physical and emotional and spiritual connection to our partner.
Right. So why are people afraid of intimacy, of opening their hearts and soul? And why are people afraid of love? You know, I mean, it's a beautiful thing, right?
Yes, absolutely.
But yet people are afraid of it. Why?
Right. Well, I mean, you're right. It's a beautiful thing, and it's something that I think that we all really do want and desire and long for. But many times, you know, we haven't always experienced that consistently in our lives. And again, like I mentioned earlier, sometimes when we get wounded in some way that says, I can't really trust the people here who are supposed to love me. The people who are supposed to love me have hurt me, or they want me to take care of them. I mean, sometimes parents need their kids to take care of them. Those early wounds result in some kind of a key decision. The woman that I was referring to who said, you know, we have great sex but not intimacy, I mean, her story was that she's a very bright, talented, beautiful person who has been very successful in many areas of her life. But she learned early in her life, that's what I need to do to get my needs met, is to be successful, to be positive, to be the kind of person that pleases everybody and makes people like me. And so that was the decision of how to get my needs met best. But what she didn't realize is in that decision-making process, she also decided to be unaware of what she really needed and how to ask for what she needs and to even be in touch with her own feelings. So she kind of sacrificed that part of herself in order to be successful. And when that happens, you know, it causes problems, obviously, in our relationship.
Yeah, what did her husband say when she said, we have great sex but no intimacy? I mean,
Yeah. Well, he wasn't in the room at that point. I was working with her one-on-one.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm not sure that she's had that conversation with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's interesting. And because part of the responsibility on her part would be to let him know, to communicate. I mean, you can't totally blame someone else if you haven't taken any steps yourself to communicate and make it better, right?
Well, that's right. You know, and so, I mean, it does cause, I mean, call for a different response. You need to begin seeing these things differently, thinking about them differently, and learn how to respond differently. And so one of the things that she was doing was enabling some behaviors that were destructive to the relationship, and she was enabling them because of her own fear. Her own fear of rejection, basically. And so, yeah, she needs to start being honest, you know, that this is what I want, this is what I need, this is what I feel. And I always use the expression, we need to learn how to speak the truth in love. And what that to me means is speak the truth in a way that your partner can actually hear it. It's not an attack. It's not a blame. It's about a sincere sharing of what I'm experiencing. This is what's going on with me. This is what I feel. This is the impact that your behavior had on me. So it's a sincere desire to help the person or your partner understand what's going on inside of you.
And when you do that, doesn't that create intimacy?
It certainly potentially can create intimacy. It's the beginning of intimacy, is being willing to be truthful about that and share that inner thoughts, inner feelings. It's a requirement for intimacy. It doesn't automatically guarantee it because, you know, the other person needs to be part of that process too, and they may not be ready to respond yet in
right.
a receptive and intimate way, but it's certainly a requirement.
Yeah. Now you say don't be afraid to live your life.
And
isn't love an integral part of being alive and living life?
Well, I certainly think it is. And yeah, you know, when I wrote that, it was really again in response to the client I was working with who was afraid to take the steps that she knew she needed to take to begin to move her life up to the next level in some ways, to overcome some of the self-defeating habits or to improve some of her relationships. And she knew she needed to do it, and yet there was fear.
So what would be some of the steps that you would suggest to someone who's in a situation like that? I'm sure
mm-hmm.
that situation is more common. You've probably seen it many times, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, one of the things I think that's helpful to remember is the fears we've been talking about, of course, are emotionally based. They're not based in any kind of logic or rational thought. So you can't just think your way out of the kind of self-defensive fears that we're talking about here. So we learn emotionally through experience. All right. So part of the steps are, first of all, understanding what's going on. So you do have some insight, and you understand the context, and I think it's helpful to understand that, you know, the behaviors that are the problem originally served a function, they served a purpose, but they no longer serve a purpose anymore. You know, the gentleman who was afraid of the snipers, we had that conversation that it might have made sense to hide behind your wall when you were 5 years old, but it makes no sense anymore because you now have the capability to take care of yourself. You have the capability to make decisions, to leave a situation, to protect yourself in ways you did not have as a child. And so understanding that then hopefully gives a person the courage to create some new experiences, and that's the experience of stepping out from behind the wall, the experience of revealing oneself, or the experience of taking whatever risk it is that you're avoiding taking. Fear is like a fire-breathing dragon that's really just an illusion that we have to walk through, to walk by. And once we experience stepping out and taking the risk and realizing, the fear was worse than the reality, we learn from those kinds of experiences.
Right. Sometimes you just have to go forward, right?
You do. You have to go forward, you know, step through the doorway of whatever it is that seems so overwhelming and intimidating and learn from that experience.
Grow it forward. Now your sight
yeah.
has new meaning now.
There you go.
That's quite clever.
Yeah.
Grow
yeah,
it
I mean,
forward.
I think that,
yeah,
that
I like
that.
Yeah. Did it take you a long time to come up with that, grow it forward? Or?
Well, you know, I was weeding my garden.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding. You know, so I've been thinking about it. You know, what do I call it, my work and my business? And, of course, you know, everybody has just seen the movie Pay It Forward. I like the concept of Pay It Forward. When I was weeding my garden, I thought, oh, this is about growth. and taking that step forward in your life. So maybe grow it forward would be a good way to say that.
Yeah, very clever. And it's true, because it really is, you can't go forward. If you're growing, you're going forward, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely.
And if you're not growing, you're being held back. Your growth is stunted.
Mm-hmm.
You're standing in one place.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's no movement. Yeah.
That's right.
Wow. So what are the key elements for a successful marriage?
Oh, good question. Well, you know, there's lots of elements. I think there's some key decisions, maybe I would frame it that way, that we need to make in order to cultivate and create the kind of marriage that we want. And so one of those key decisions is, first of all, to raise the bar. That's just one of the things that I have, I take on as kind of a mission, is I want to raise the bar on marriage in general. You know, in our society, the way we think about marriage, our expectations for marriage. I have a program I call Reimagine Marriage, and it's about having a new perspective and new expectations. So that's step number one to me, is making a decision. I want more. I want to raise the bar. And then I kind of think we need to revisit and find what's the positive core, what's the foundation of this relationship. Do we really care about each other, and why? What brought us together in the first place? And so we begin to shift away from focusing on the problems and focusing on our angry feelings and all of those things, to begin focusing on what's the positive core here, what can we build on. Then I think there's another important decision, which is to stop this merry-go-round or the cycle of pain and the patterns. And so we make decisions to stop blaming each other, take responsibility for ourselves, recognize what's going on here, recognizing that this is driven by our fear and that we need to make some decisions to confront that together. Then there's another key decision. This is really just kind of four phases that I've mapped out. And the other one is a decision to bring back that loving feeling, is what I call it. And that really happens when we begin to understand how to meet the needs of ourselves and our partner at the same time. So knowing what those needs are and understanding how to meet those, what's the behaviors that help meet those needs, what's the language that expresses love. There's lots of tools underneath that. But a commitment and a decision to really bring back those feelings of love and connection and intimacy is what sustains a healthy relationship over time. And then the other key decision is really to kind of commit to that long-term growth. We're on a path, we're on a journey, we're growing up together, we're maturing together, we're learning, and stages of life demand different things from us, right? So we have to constantly learn and grow and adjust, I think. And so when
now
you put
I have
all
another,
that together,
I have another
okay.
question, because you work with so many couples.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see different problems in couples who've been together for a shorter period of time versus longer, or are a lot of the problems similar?
Well, okay, yes and no. So I think the similarity is the basic dynamics that we talked about. So the same kinds of stumbling blocks that are present at the beginning of the marriage can be present 20, 30 years later if you haven't worked through the process and understood and developed the kind of intimacy we're talking about. So the basic dynamics can be exactly the same, unfortunately, right? But as I said, the problems can also be different because the demands of the stage of life you're at, the demands of the stage of the relationship are significantly different. So couples that are younger, have young children at home, you get a different kind of stress than the couple who's facing the empty nest, or the couple who is growing older together, or, you know, couples who's having financial problems. I mean, there's all kinds of factors that create uniqueness to every relationship challenge, but the underlying emotional dynamics don't seem to be any different.
Oh, that's interesting. regardless of what it is. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, someone in the chat room wants to know what to do with a man who cannot talk and avoids. I don't know. Is it possible that it's not that he cannot? Maybe that's interesting.
I suspect what she means is that this is someone who doesn't seem to have the vocabulary or doesn't really know how to talk about what he's really feeling, sharing that inner world space again, right? And so, I mean, this is very similar to the couple we were talking about earlier of a woman who's feeling shut out and abandoned emotionally and frustrated. I don't know how to get this man to talk to me or to open up to me and connect with me. So, again, the problem is not the man per se. The problem is, again, seeing that your feelings of frustration result in a reaction that exacerbates his feeling of insecurity, and he doesn't really feel the safety to come up from behind that wall yet. Now, I'm not saying he's, you know, maybe as verbally gifted as she might be. A lot of times people have never been asked, you know, what are you really thinking? What are you really feeling? You know, explain that. I mean, sometimes you don't develop the skill sets.
That's interesting. So, yeah, that a lot of times people, sometimes it's as simple as asking, how are you feeling? What are you feeling at this particular moment? You know, that's interesting that a lot of people, they'll say, well, oh, he's not talking to me, but then perhaps they're not talking to them either, right?
Well, you know, sometimes over time you get discouraged and you do stop asking. I suspect that this is a woman who's asked and she's tried and she's grown tired and frustrated with that. Going back to being able to speak the truth in a spirit of love is part of the answer here. And part of that is creating a space between you and inviting a person into that space. So the only thing you can control is your own attitudes and behaviors and thoughts. And so I would encourage this person to begin to talk about her concerns and her feelings only from her own point of view, that it you know, help him understand that, you know, it hurts me. I feel lonely. I feel frustrated. My desire is to really connect with you. He's probably got also a feeling like he's not getting some of his personal core needs met. So, again, it goes back to understanding what is it that he really needs and wants. Many times for men, it's an issue of significance or importance, right? He needs to feel, that like he is significant and he's important and he can be successful. And when a man starts to understand or feel like he's not making his wife successful, he begins to shut down because he starts to feel hopeless. So one thing that sometimes is really helpful is to begin to build him up, to make sure that he understands how important he is to you. Make sure that you let him know, you know, the things he does that make you feel happy. And so focus on those things that build up his sense of significance and importance. And when a man feels like those needs are being met, oftentimes his willingness and desire to fulfill the woman's need for connection and love become more of a natural response. So
will that help? Will that help him to open up and to talk more? Or,
well, I think it'll help him to be more willing to do so. That doesn't mean he's going to suddenly turn into a real emotional guy and a real insightful person. But, you know, he's in this relationship for a reason, and deep down underneath his behavior, there is some desires to please his wife and to meet her needs and also have his needs met. And there's also, I would guarantee, some fears that he doesn't know how to do that and some fears that he's failing at that. And so you have to, you know, respond in that, to that level, not at the level of the behavior or the content, but the level of what's going on emotionally and psychologically. So that's a general answer to a specific question, but I don't know the specific situation. So that's,
right.
But hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah. So is there something about when you approach even a difficult situation with heart, with softness, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I don't know, it just, it's hard for someone to resist that when you're being very gentle with them.
Yes, and that's that spirit of love is, you know, this is my true desire is to know you and to connect with you and to make you happy and to meet your needs. And it's also my desire for you to know me and understand me on that level. And it's because
yeah.
I love you and care about you. And yeah, that's a much more of an inviting approach than the kind of response that typically happens when somebody feels hurt and shut out and frustrated.
Yeah. Well, they're giving more information. They're saying, we are not married. We were just dating. For 1 week, he is my neighbor. So I see him on the street all the time. He says, we are neighbors, and now we pass by each other without saying hello. So sad.
Oh.
That's
a whole different relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that amazing how you could go from, well, you know, there's this saying, there's a very thin line, how you could go from dating someone and being very warm and friendly, and then you see them on the street and you won't even speak to them. It's kind of hard to understand in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so did she say they had been dating? Is that what she said?
Yeah, let me go back for you.
Yeah, I didn't catch that, actually.
Yeah, it says, we were dating and after a struggle, can't talk. We are neighbors, and now we pass by each other without saying hello.
Mm-hmm.
So sad. We are not married. We were just dating. For 1 week, he is my neighbor, so I see him on the street all the time.
Oh. They were dating for 1 week?
That I'm not clear about.
Yeah,
but,
well, okay.
Yeah.
So.
But I don't know.
I mean, that's a whole different kind of relationship, and so I don't really know. You know, he may just be wanting to move on. You know,
right.
Maybe he's hurt. I really don't know. You know what's going on with him, but you know.
Yeah, but that's
kind of
crude to go. You know, from dating to not even speaking to someone. I mean,
mm-hmm.
How could
yeah.
someone just shut someone out like that and be so? I mean, certainly there's no harm in saying good morning if you pass someone.
Right. But, you know, I don't really know, you know, what he's angry about. He sounds like he's angry. He probably feels hurt in some way. So, I mean, that's the way he's choosing to deal with it at this point. And I would kind of just back off, frankly, and give him some space, you know, try to be friendly, keep the door open. But you know, if you try to pursue somebody who doesn't want to be in a relationship, the only thing they're going to do is back off further. So,
right. And says, I did not do anything wrong, nothing. That's difficult. But, you know, sometimes maybe it's a good thing that the relationship in those cases didn't go any further.
Yeah. Yeah, I would let it go, frankly.
Right. And says, okay, I will back off. Thank you. Yeah, sometimes it's just a sign to let it go.
Right.
And in those cases, and, you know, thankfully they didn't get married, you know.
Right, exactly. Hang on 1 second here.
Oh, did something happen?
You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Okay. Yep.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's it.
Still there?
Yeah. So.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I wonder, now, do you get to see couples before they get married?
I do sometimes, yes.
Yeah, I would imagine that that's great work, and really is very helpful to a relationship to have that sort of coaching before marriage, too.
Yeah, I think it can be very helpful if you really begin to understand the dynamics of a relationship and what's important, and you know, learn how to begin that communication process early in a relationship with open eyes. It can be very helpful, yes.
So now you talk about the two guiding principles, three golden rules. Is that different from, well, I had asked you the key elements for a successful marriage, but, or for, so
well, it's
what
not,
was.
It's not really different. It's certainly related. You know, when I talk about two guiding principles, what I'm talking about is the principles of love and honor. And those sound like kind of marriage vows words in some ways, but if you stop and think about it, if you are in the frame of mind and in living by kind of the values and principles of love and honor, then you know, everything else kind of falls in place in some way. So what I mean by that is, first of all, understanding you know, that love is kind of the essence of relationships, even in, you know, even in these arranged marriages we talked about earlier. I mean, that, I think that's the goal or the thing that makes them become fulfilling, is the ability to love both yourself and your partner, right? And
right.
It starts oftentimes with yourself. And what that means, of course, is knowing yourself, knowing your partner, accepting and being willing to, you know, attach and be open, be vulnerable, and have, you know, the other person's best interest at heart. I mean, we know what love is a lot of times, but it's more than just the feeling. It's the decision to really live in that spirit of making loving decisions, both for yourself and for your partner. And when I talk about honor, it's a little bit different than that. To me, it's really having a place of distinction in your heart for somebody. So you give them a special place of honor in your own heart and your own mind. And when you're in that frame of mind where you first of all, you apply that both ways. And when I'm loving myself and when I'm honoring myself, what does that mean? You know, it means I'm making decisions for myself that are good for me, they're healthy for me. I'm trying my best to know who I am, to be in touch with the core of who I am, and to express that in some way to the world, and to share that. And so I'm going to make decisions that are really in my best interest. And but at the same time, if you're applying that to your partner, it's the same thing. I'm choosing to really love this person, but I'm also choosing to behave in a way that honors who he or she is,
right,
to build them up, to respect them. And I'm going to use that principle to guide me in my decisions. So I'm not going to do things that are dishonoring to my partner if I really live by that principle, right?
Right.
So if you find yourself behaving in ways that you know are going to be hurtful, then you're off base. So really, if that becomes your mindset, that I'm going to love and honor both myself and my partner, and you can extend that into kind of a spiritual context. You know, I'm loving and honoring God as I understand God also by loving and honoring myself and my partner, and it becomes this system working all together to create the quality of relationships that we desire.
You know, I wonder if it even extends beyond marriage, you know, any
mm-hmm.
relationship, even friendships.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you have to respect yourself, and then, of course, respect the other person. It seems like
yeah.
these principles would apply to almost any relationship, whether it's a working relationship. You know what I mean? Don't you?
I do.
Yeah.
I would agree with you, definitely. You know, I mean, the behaviors are different, obviously, in different relationships, but if those are your guiding principles in general, I'm going to love people, I'm going to honor people, I'm going to love myself in those relationships, yeah, I think the world would definitely be a happier place, don't you?
Right, because basically, when you do that, when you love yourself, then you can love others. You respect yourself and honor yourself, then you can respect and honor others.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly. But it begins with you.
Yes, it does. And that's part of that road to recovery, again, is that journey back to knowing yourself, accepting yourself, loving yourself, and kind of becoming that more of an integrated whole person.
Yeah. It's so important to be whole within yourself. That seems to be a big key.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
To be the whole person.
Right, and that doesn't mean you don't need anybody else, of course. It just means that, you know, you're authentic, you're honest, you understand the essence of who you are and realize that you are on a journey to learning and growing and becoming more of who you really are, hopefully every day, in that part of that process is the willingness to share ourselves with other people that we care about. And so that, I think, to me, that describes the ideal of the long-term journey of marriage, is that we're growing and learning together and becoming more and more whole, both of us. You know, we're not depending on the other person to fix us, but
right.
we're working together towards becoming more and more of who we are and loving and honoring each other in that process.
Yeah. And when someone is very needy, it's really a sign that they don't feel adequate, wouldn't you say? Or they don't feel confident about themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these things show up in all kinds of different ways. But yeah, neediness usually, you know, is coming out of that same fearful, wounded place, you know, that nobody really loves me, nobody really has been there. They don't have that sense of security that, you know, that I'm adequate in and of myself, and also that I can count on other people. And so sometimes then you have a constant need for this reassurance. And if you understand that about yourself, I mean, some people, are naturally even more wired towards needing acceptance and approval. I mean, motivation is a whole nother conversation, but sometimes we're more motivated towards acceptance and approval. That's not a problem necessarily in and of itself. If you know that about yourself and you understand that about yourself, and if you can get the needs for recognition and approval met in healthy and constructive ways.
Now, how do you handle a situation where you'll have one person say, our marriage is fine, and the other person says, no, it's not working? So essentially, I guess what you have is one person who's willing to work on the marriage. The other person thinks everything is fine, but certainly
right.
if one partner is unhappy, it isn't fine, is it?
No, it's certainly not fine. And you know, the problem, again, is that they really haven't been honest enough with each other about that, and they haven't been communicating in a way that's effective. And, you know, if somebody is saying that, I think everything is fine when it's not, is, again, just simply a self-defense. You know, they're really afraid to be honest at that point.
Right. I wonder why it's so hard for us to live according to these kinds of principles, even though we want them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think, again, it goes back to our experiences and the essence of who we are. I mean, we're a combination of both, you know, our genetic dispositions. So we come into the world with certain personality traits and certain talents and skills. But then we're shaped by our culture and we're shaped by our environment and our experiences. And as I said, to the extent that we get hurt and wounded and our core emotional needs are not addressed or not met, you know, we learn to find some other ways to adapt to that. We compensate, and most of the time they're not really healthy and constructive ways because, you know, we're just trying to survive at that point as a kid.
You know, from listening to you, one of the key things it seems to is one of the things that you seem to do from listening to you in your coaching sessions is you help people to communicate, to share their feelings. Mm-hmm. That really is the beginning, isn't it?
That's certainly part of the process, definitely. I mean, I think the beginning, you know, as I said earlier, is recognizing what's going on and making some decisions to focus on, you know, what's the root of the problem, what's really creating this. And then once we begin to see that and take a willingness to see each other differently, we shift our perspective and we make some decisions to try to understand and meet each other's needs, you know, then communication becomes a vital part of that process, a willingness to be open, a willingness to talk about what's really your hurts, your fears, your needs, your desires, those kinds of things. So, yes, communication is obviously an important part of that process, but I never start with, you know, trying to teach people just how to communicate or listen to each other or go through those communication exercises, because that doesn't get to the root of the problem.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah. But how do you do it? How do you get them to go to the root of the problem when people are resistant like that sometimes? You're laughing.
Yeah.
That's why you're a coach, right? You coach
them
exactly.
through.
It's like, how do you do that?
Right.
You know, when they're so resistant. Must take a lot of energy on your part to do that, because you have to be very gentle and patient.
Sometimes you have to be gentle. Almost always you have to be patient. Sometimes you got to kind of hit people between the eyes with a 2x4. you have to interrupt the current pattern, right? So stop people from kind of repeating the same responses, repeating the same behaviors, and It's a learning process. So, I mean, I think that is part of the skill of a good coach or a good therapist, is being able to see the patterns, to understand what's going on, and then ask the right kinds of questions, give people the right frameworks, and then help them to learn and to understand. And it doesn't happen usually instantaneously. I have had people, you know, say in one session, wow, you opened my eyes and I know exactly what to do and everything turns out great. But I've also had situations where it takes a good 6 months to get to that point.
Yeah.
So it really varies from couple to couple and person to person.
So tell us about your program. It's Reimagine Marriage, Finding Higher Ground Through Deeper Relationships.
Yes, so... you know, there's different approaches and different things that I do with people. So part of that is, I mean, that particular program is a group coaching program for women, and that program is currently, actually, I'm not enrolling people in that, although I probably will be opening another roundup for that. But a lot of times I'll either work with people individually on relationship issues, or I'll work with couples. And like I say, sometimes I'll work with people in a group setting, kind of getting group support in understanding these relationship dynamics. But sometimes people, you know, are frustrated because they feel like, you know, I'm the only one really willing to work on my marriage, and I can't do anything about it because my partner is not willing to work with me.
Right.
And that's not really... oftentimes the case, and because it begins with understanding that the marriage is a system, and the nature of a system is when one part of a system changes, the other part of that system has to adapt and change also. And so if one person begins to shift their behaviors and their attitudes and their responses and kind of changing the dance step of the relationship, and if they do that sincerely and consistently over a period of time, the other person begins to notice and has to respond to that, and oftentimes the response can be very positive. So that's part of what I do with people, is, you know, help them see what's going on, help them take responsibility and recognize that there are things that they can do. If you want, I can give you a quick example of a woman who went through that process. It's, to me, it's kind of interesting because I do executive coaching too, so a lot of what I do is work with people on workplace issues and leadership development, and I find leadership development has some similarities because you still have to face your own fears and know yourself and understand what motivates you, those kinds of things. But this is a woman who really came in because she had some concerns about how her anger was causing problems in her work life, creating high stress for her. And then kind of secondarily, she said, oh, by the way, I'm not very happy in my marriage either, and we might need to address that and make a decision whether or not I want to stay married. Well, through the process of coaching, what we discovered was some very interesting patterns in her life. And again, a lot of these patterns are coming from the same fear stuff we were talking about. She had a pattern of self-sacrifice to please other people. She had difficulty speaking up and telling the truth about what she was thinking and what she was feeling. She found it hard to ask for what she wanted and needed. And consequently, she lacked confidence in herself. And she also had a high need for control and perfectionism. So these were some of the traits that she discovered about herself, all those coming out of decisions about how to get her needs met at an earlier stage of her life. So as we began talking about that, she started making some changes in her behaviors. And, well, before she started making changes, what she was able to see was that the underlying patterns resulted in things like she would ask people to do things for her, or if people would ask her to do things for them, she would change her priorities to accommodate people. So she found herself, sort of trying to please and sort of neglecting her own needs in that process. Then she would tell herself a story about how other people were mistreating her and how inconsiderate they were of her feelings. That would result in her feeling resentful and angry, and then she would lose focus and lose confidence. And so once she understood that and began to be willing to make some changes, she started setting some boundaries. She started being more aware of herself and what she was doing, more accountable for herself, stating her needs and priorities. Guess what she found out? She found out that, again, her fear was just an illusion, that people still liked her. In fact, they actually respected her more, when she was stating her needs and her feelings and opinions. She was able to show up more with her strengths. Now she started focusing on what she was good at, showing up as she was, focusing on those positive qualities. And as a result, she was much more effective. She was much less angry and happier in general. I was going to say, what she also discovered then was that change internally she started applying to her marriage as well. It started spilling over as she started being more honest in her marriage and asking for what she needed, being more accountable for herself instead of blaming her husband. And, like I said, her husband had to make some adjustments. He started noticing these things, and actually he liked the new person too. It's like, wow. This is energizing for that relationship.
Right.
So, it's very, very interesting.
Yeah. How one affects the other.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of times if we're unhappy in one situation, like at work, we carry it home, don't we?
Oh, absolutely, we do. And so part of the coaching I do is around kind of this work-life balance struggle that people have because, people are stressed out at work and there's lots of demands, especially career people. And then if they come home and they don't have a partnership that's supportive, encouraging, where the load is not being shared effectively, they find that they're being emotionally drained at home too. So where are they getting their batteries recharged, right? So I think the key to work-life balance for people who are married oftentimes has to do with the marriage relationship itself. Working on understanding the things we've been talking about is how to create the quality of partnership where you can negotiate from a space of love and you can begin to feel connected, feel like you're supported. Sometimes life is so busy and demanding that we neglect our relationship. And when our relationship suffers, we begin to suffer emotionally.
Right. You have to take care of the relationship like you take care of everything else. You can't ignore it. What about all the people who are dating and looking to get married, or do you have any suggestions for them on...
Well, know yourself well, first of all. So like I said, a lot of times when we're young, we go into relationships not really understanding our own emotional baggage, if for lack of a better term, not really understanding what our values are real clearly, what our priorities are, what's most important to us. So, spend some time getting to know yourself and what you want out of life and what's most important to you, what your guiding values are, et cetera. And then, of course, when you go through that process, you're going to kind of elevate yourself to a higher emotional place, right? So if you get past some of the stuff that holds you down into this kind of low emotional vibration plane, and you get yourself up to a higher place, then you're going to attract somebody into that space who's also healthier, right? So that's, I think, the most important thing is get yourself healthy, be in that healthier space if you want to find somebody else who's also in a healthier place, right? So when you start out in a marriage with two people who are relatively healthy and then have the ability to help each other continue to grow and mature, that's a good foundation for a relationship.
Yeah, that's great. So do you have anything that you'd like to share that we have not covered? Any stories or anything? Do you do any of your counseling over the phone or most of it?
Yes, absolutely. I do two different kinds of things. So I do have an office, and I see people face to face, and that's usually how I like to work with couples here locally. I'm in Minnesota, but when it comes to actually the coaching process, I do work with people around the world, and I do work over the phone, and there's some skills that you develop over time of working with people on the phone. And learning how to pick up emotional cues through the phone receiver instead of through your eyeballs of a person sitting in front of you. So yes, definitely, I do work with people on the phone. One thing I would like to say is I have put some things out there on the internet for people. You mentioned my blog at growitforward.com. I would encourage people to look at that. I also put together a video called The Dynamic Marriage Map, which helps people kind of get a sense of where are we in our relationship. It's kind of the journey, as we've been talking about, journey towards maturity. And so it's dynamicmarriagemap.com.
Oh,
if people
really?
Would like to go and look at that, it's out there. And it was an early video, so I don't think it's the best performance that I've done in terms of, being online, but I just wanted to put some things out there. And so you can go out there and take a look at that. It'll give you some additional information to kind of put yourself on the map. Where are we in our relationship stage? And if you watch that, and if people are interested in talking to me, you can contact me through Grow It Forward, tom@growitforward.com. I'd be more than happy to talk with people about their relationship, about my coaching services, and I will be creating more programs too. There's just so much to teach people, and I think people learn in different ways. So I'll be creating some programs where people can do kind of some online teleseminars and some other things down the road here a little bit. And I'll probably be doing some more group coaching and opening that up again as well. So.
Well, that's really great that you do the services on the phone. That means anyone anywhere can call for your help.
Yes, absolutely.
For your coaching.
That's right. Yes, and I love doing that. I love helping people Understand where they are, where they're stuck, and how we get unstuck. And I give people a systematic way of doing that.
Yeah, you help people to just grow it forward. I love that. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's wonderful. Well, you do wonderful work, and we're going to be needing your services for a very long time. So.
Well, that's true. I mean, there's no shortage of relationship challenges.
Yeah,
but,
you say, I was reading something on you and it said the real reason most people won't ever experience the intimacy they desire is that they don't have the knowledge or a system to get there. Mm. And, you know, you talk about how there's always help. We talked about that earlier. And certainly you're out there to help people,
yes.
You know, to help them, to guide them. Because it is a process, and it doesn't, sometimes it falls in place, but not often, right? Sometimes we do need that extra help to guide us along the way.
Right. And, you know, and I always encourage people to you know, not wait till there's a crisis. we don't have to be in a crisis state to get some coaching. It's, you know, I think people who have been listening to this begin to understand that the struggles in their marriage are very similar to the struggles in just about every marriage. And it's that process of understanding what's going on, seeing the cycles of pain that we get stuck in, recognizing our fears, learning how to walk through that and having a person who understands the system to walk you through that can be extremely helpful. And so, like I say, let's elevate marriage. Let's imagine it in different ways. Let's raise the bar and recognize that it can be the source of great joy and support in your life.
Right. Yeah. You know, I was looking at I love this, the road to recovery, and you say, so do not be afraid. Venture forth. Ask for help and guidance and trust that there is light waiting to be found. The road
right.
may be rough and scary at first, but you will not regret taking this road less traveled. Live your life. And how about live your life and love your life? How's
there
that?
There you go. That's right. You know, let me say one more thing. I really forgot to kind of mention that this is also a very personal issue for me. I mean, it's not only just professional, it's also personal. And my personal story is that I've been married for 35 years now. And that's quite a journey, which means that I got married pretty young. I was, you know, my early 20s when I got married, and I have two lovely daughters, and I now have three granddaughters. I just had a new grandchild born a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations.
And so I've been on this road personally, and I didn't start out in this marriage relationship understanding any of this either. I didn't know what in the world was going on in my relationship. I got stuck in these same kind of cycles, and I went through the pain and the struggle of sort of, you know, learning and figuring this stuff out as I went. And so obviously it helped to have professional education and training around that, but a lot of it's learning through experience and
right.
the experience of struggling through the pain and struggling through the frustration, going through the valleys, and also learning to appreciate the great things that we both bring into this relationship and learning to see each other for who we really are and accept each other for who we are and love each other has been a very rewarding process, but it's not been one without its bumps.
Right.
So, you know, it's very personal, and it's also a professional passion. So I
now,
just wanted
to make work,
that clear.
The fact that you do this work for others,
mm-hmm.
did it help you in your relationship?
Well, yes, it did, I would say, but it doesn't make the the process necessarily any easier. You know, because understanding it intellectually is one thing, but
right.
Like I say, we learn emotionally through our experiences. So I still had to walk through my own frustrations and fears and pains and struggles with it. So
you have to live it, like you say, when you say live your life.
I had to live it. I had to live it and learn as I go, and I'm still learning. You know, nobody reaches levels of perfection. We just we're just continuing to grow. So it isn't like coaches and therapists have got it all together. You know, we're human beings and we struggle too. But I've learned, and I've learned because I wanted to learn, and I was sincere, and I had that commitment to learn. And I came from families with good role models also. I think that helped. My parents were married for 55 years when my father died.
Wow.
So
you know what it takes. I mean, you've seen it, you've observed it, and you've lived it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So
you really have a very deep understanding when a couple sits in front of you. You really have a sort of a heart connection, you know, to the man.
Usually I can feel what's going on as well as understand what's going on, and so I think that helps me to appreciate where people are at and what they're going through, as well as then give them a roadmap to get to where they need to go.
Yeah. And isn't it a beautiful thing to work with a couple who came into your office one way, and then after, you know, a few months, things were better because there was that softening.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing, amazing transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and softening is a good word. Right, you know, softening towards each other, turning towards each other, learning to love each other in a kind of a deeper way. And
yeah.
So you're right. It is absolutely rewarding to see that.
Yeah, it is. It's important work that you do.
I appreciate that. I think it's important, and it's like I said, it's kind of a mission to try to make everybody understand what's possible, and to hopefully take hope and take courage in that. I know it can be very discouraging, and you might think, you know, your situation is different from anybody else's, or you might think it's hopeless, but it's usually not.
Yeah, there's always hope, right? When there's life,
yes,
there's always hope.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful. We appreciate you and your work, and I just love your blog, and I encourage everyone to go over there so they can grow it forward. I love that.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I would love to hear from your audience, even if it's just comments or questions, or if there's some interest in seeing how I can be helpful to you. I would love to hear from you.
Yeah, that would be beautiful. Yeah, it's great to know that you're there to be helpful. Because if anyone's looking for help, you're there to help. Because there's always help, you say.
There is.
And when you want it, the help is there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. When the student is ready, the teacher appears, they say. Right.
They say that. Yeah.
And I believe it. I do believe it.
Mm-hmm. A path that promises hope. Not despair and healing.
Right.
Yeah, I love that. Divine love is there and open. I love that. As you venture in with open mind and open heart, you discover that divine love is there, waiting for your invitation, leading you back to your core and your source. It's so beautiful. You write so beautifully.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Well, my pleasure to be here. It's obviously a subject matter near and dear to my heart that I love talking about. And so I appreciate the opportunity to reach out and connect with your audience.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure, and I do appreciate your work. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay, and take care.
All right. Thank you so much.
All righty.
Bye now.
Bye. I would like to thank our guest, Executive Marriage Coach Tom King, for being here to take us on the journey to deeper intimacy. For more information, visit www.growitforward.com. To each and every one of you out there, thank you so much for joining me, Andrea Garrison, and connecting here online with Andrea. Listen to me live or listen to the archive. Just continue connecting heart to heart. Make sure you join me next time here on Blog Talk Radio, the citizen's voice on the Internet, taking radio to a new interactive and expansive level. But in the meantime, do whatever you can to reach out to help others and never underestimate the power of a friendly smile. Thank you so much for listening to Andrea Garrison. Take care.
Thank you for connecting to Online with Andrea with your host, Andrea Garrison.